Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, good morning, everyone, and I'm so happy to say I think the little white flakes are about to end. Maybe the sun will shine. Wouldn't that be cool? But it's going to get hot and steamy here because we have three outstanding romance writers that know how to write it and keep it up to just below the boiling point. Ha ha. And I'm going to introduce them to you one at a time. And I'm going to sit with my pencil and paper because I promised my primary care doctor that my next novel was going to be a little hot and a little steamy, but we have to learn first. So we've got the Queen of Hot and Steamy, who wrote the Virginia Templeton stories that are really great, and I really like them. And she also has a new blockbuster hit that just came out, Grand Central Station. Marcia Casper-Cook is here. Hi, Marcia.
Hi. Hello. Been a while since we did a show together. I know.
This is so cool. We were together on the World of Ink, and now we're on the World
Red River. Red River.
Yeah, I'm on Red River sometimes, but not often.
Yeah.
And then we have the author of Hypocrites, which was one of my favorite novels, and I hope she's writing a sequel because the end of that book was hot and steamy. Doris McCurry is here. Hi, Doris.
Hello. And thank you.
And then we have a male author, which is really cool. And he wrote, I Will Be the One. And I am so happy to have Larry Farmer here. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning.
And we're going to talk about how you create your novel. So anyone that wants to take it, here's my first interesting question. The hardest part for me is to figure out the main storyline and the main characters. Now, I know that Marcia Wright has a whole bunch of beginnings of books. Betty, she read them to me the other day that are really good. That those ideas, I said, like, why didn't I think of that? So how do you start your novel, your romance? Do you start with the main characters? Do you start with what they're going to do? How do you begin to write?
I go with character because, you know, I think my strongest suit is my characters. You know, other people have stronger suits that are, you know, the plot or whatever. I start with my characters, and they kind of, which I wanted to tell you yesterday when you asked, when we were talking about this, is that usually, and I think probably the other people that are on the show too will probably agree, sometimes the characters take you in a way that, you know, you weren't really planning on, which makes it fun.
Mm-hmm.
So when you come up with the name that you like, which, you know, and I've listened to a lot of shows too of other people, and it's the name is important. And once you get the name and you kind of, you know, I used to write out, and sometimes I do like a whole bio of the character and try to, you know, imagine it. Virginia Templeton is nothing like me, but she was a lot of fun to write. And I took her from one of my screenplays because I wanted to write something steamy, and it was a little harder for me to do that. So I remembered I had a character that could do it for me, and she could do what I can't, you know. And sometimes a character, that's why it takes a lot of people sometimes time to realize that what they write as a character isn't really them. So because sometimes people are afraid I inhibited myself sometimes in not wanting to write certain things. But, I start with the character. That's mine.
How did you start, Doris, for your particular book, which I loved, by the way?
I start with the character as well, and they've always got challenges. And when I think about their challenges and I start developing their character and their challenges, I take my other character and how will their challenges and what's going on in their life, how they affect each other and how they can help each other possibly and how they can actually hurt each other possibly, you know, in the resolution of their difficulties. So it's just a continuing process.
That is true because, you know, you start out with one particular idea and it's hard to know which direction. I'm listening and writing at the same time. Larry, you wrote nonfiction, so how does that play into your book?
Well, I write it in fictionalized form, but yes, nonfiction, and it's based on real-life events in my life. And so that's my foundation. But, of course, you want to make it marketable and interesting and attract the market. So I will alter certain things and maybe Hollywood it up a bit, but my foundation is on real-life events, and they meant enough to me and or others and stood out enough to where it's a go, and then you fill in the blanks with what you feel you need.
Yeah, that is really good because the hardest part for me Each of your characters is unique unto themselves. Like in Grand Central, Marcia's Victoria and other mm-hmm. characters are each unique unto themselves, and they sort of blend into each other. So what attributes do you create in your characters that help them to work together? And what attributes do you have, because every story has a conflict, or should have a conflict?
Well, in Victoria, you know, what I did with her is she's also taken mm-hmm. from a screenplay, and, you know, because when you do mm-hmm. a screenplay, the characters are really important. So that's, you know, when Victoria, she had some good qualities. Virginia mm-hmm. was tougher in my Virginia Templeton stories. She was tougher, but, you know, and I'm working on something else with her because she isn't as
good.
Tough. But sometimes it takes time to go to the backstory of the character to realize what I, you know, I always look at it that sometimes there's something that made them in their life become this way, because usually that's what happens. So sometimes in Virginia Templeton, there is a psychiatrist that she talks to, and it so happens mm-hmm. that Victoria, she ends up going with a psychiatrist. So I don't know why they end up. Maybe it's because that I worked in medicine for so many years and I worked for doctors that I end up with characters somewhere in a hospital, and I didn't realize I did that, but I do. So that sometimes is trying to find out when they're talking, like in Virginia, she's talking to a psychiatrist, so she's trying to figure out, and she does lie a lot. Mm-hmm. So she still, even to this day, I'm not even sure what her backstory is because she lies a lot. That's her.
Well, I hope you're not done with her yet.
I'm not.
Because you can't possibly be done with her yet, because she's got a lot more to say. And considering I remember the last story,
I think it was that was
ending.
One of my problems. You know, on my show yeah. that you know I talk about some of the problems. I think it was my problem with it when I tried to make this in a short story, and then I added on two other
yeah.
stories. I don't think I'll do that again because I didn't. The good thing is people wanted more. But I think
yeah.
I didn't give them as much as they needed. So I didn't realize that. But now I do. So, you know, sometimes it doesn't matter how long you write. You know, and Fran, one thing for you, you just have to start mm-hmm. writing it. It'll come to you because you've written a lot mm-hmm. and, you know, you
yeah.
talk to a lot of people, so you'll draw from what you know. So I think once you start writing it, it'll be a lot easier than you think.
Well, I'm hoping because my hairdresser's son is a bodybuilder. He's on Facebook. And when I saw Frank a couple of weeks ago, I said, if I wrote a book that you would want to read, because he's young 20s,
mm-hmm.
I said, if you want to read something, what would you want to read about? He said, a relationship gone bad.
That's interesting.
And he said, a YA book would be really great, a relationship gone bad,
yeah.
teaching teens what to do and what not to do and teaching them lessons.
Yeah.
So I said, I write that in my other books. So how do you create that first meeting between the two characters, and what obstacles do you create so everybody knows that, you know, they might like each other, they're not? Because in Grand Central, that was very clever, by the way. And how do you create that very first meeting when you know that these two first key characters may wind up together or may not? How
well,
do you do that?
Well, for me, I, you know, sometimes what happens is that I – when they meet, because I wrote screenplays on these with these characters, you don't have as much time. So I tend to rush it. And so these are some of the things that people shouldn't do. You know, I try a lot of
mm-hmm.
things because I've done this for you. But, you know, I feel that love exists sometimes on a first meeting, and you just feel that connection. So my characters sometimes feel that, and they don't always end up together, you know, and there's always other reasons why they don't end up together. But on the initial meeting, for me, when someone sees someone, I think that there's a connection. And sometimes it's a sometimes people are, like in a lot of books, there's not a connection and it becomes a connection,
yeah.
you know. So it depends on the characters, who they meet, and when you start the story, what happens if they really, you know, if they really are interested in the person. But a lot of times I tend to like that a lot, when they meet and then they just, naturally there's obstacles, but I tend to like, it's not that it's a happy ending all the time when you write not a romance, but it depends what happens if they end up together. But that really is where your book takes you. And that's what I think for you, Fran, when you start writing, I think you'll see for yourself how it happens. Because I'm not sure of my ending because it makes it more fun for me.
Well, I had a thought about writing about something that happened to me tons of years ago, but I won't say what, and then maybe using that as a starting point because
it's a good
really
idea.
Did happen. So, Larry, where are you going to take it next? I mean, I know you're going to write another one for me so I can read it.
Yes, ma'am.
At least I'm hoping you're
going to
write another one. I mean, I was surprised when I read it, and I was really excited about – I read four authors on your site. I read your book, which was fantastic. I read Doris and Anne. I read one other that I won't say. And the one other that I thought I wrote a really good review, I guess it wasn't five stars. It was only four, but it was okay. So what are you going to write next for me, and how are you going to use what you did for Vietnam, this particular story, or are you going to continue with something else?
Well, I'm just now finishing one that actually is based on a true story, but not mine. My sister lives in the Middle East, and so she's seeing ISIS firsthand and things like that. She lives amongst Hezbollah and Christians and all this. I mean, the whole. And the thing is, I'm writing it first person, fictionalized memoir like I do my own, but it's more memoirish and it's also very politically incorrect. My sister doesn't hold punches. And so I'm going to self publish this one. Would you still be interested in reading it?
Oh, of course.
If it's self published?
Yes,
I don't
want
to really answer to a publisher on this. You know what I'm saying? I respect
them. I don't blame
them.
I'm
not trying to knock it, but they have a direction, and I understand it and appreciate it. But I really, my sister's in the middle of this stuff, and I don't want to hold back. So I decided to self-publish, and I'd love.
Are you
going to
use CreateSpace, or are you going to use a regular self-publisher? I use a self-publisher to publish my books.
I will take your advice. I'm a member of a writing club here. I work for Texas A&M. So what I'm saying, we have fellow authors and, you know, around. I have a lot of people to give me good advice. But I would also be interested in your advice, and we can talk through email or something like that.
Fran, can I just add something? About
sure,
the publisher.
Ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to say that I publish all my books for the last 8 years with I've hit small publishers, and I decided myself, you know, to do this myself because you do have control. And Fidelity Publishing, she publishes. But you have to find your own editor. She can help you with the cover because she's a graphic artist. But over these years and over the last 6 years of interviewing many, many people and having a lot of people on, I feel that she's one of the most qualified, and one of the things that I find difficult is how many people out there are not qualified. So my opinion would be the less advice you get from people that just because they did a book, Fran, I know you're going to agree with this, because it's not in your best interest. You have to pick someone you trust and and get the book done. But I don't like a lot of opinions because some people out there have done independently published books not in the right way.
Yeah, she's excellent because every book that she's done, and I have an editor that doesn't charge me $1 million. She's excellent. I just wish she would get done with my last book, Faces 4. But, yeah, Robin is great because she doesn't charge outrageous prices.
No.
And it's a package, and it includes sometimes she'll ask me to review the book, but in your case, don't worry about it.
She formats good. She formats.
Yeah, she does.
Very important when you're independently publishing.
Which is even better because I mess up. I just hand her the book and go, you fix the table of contents, you fix this, you fix that. And I got, for my last book, The Vanishing Mind of Ruth Rudloff, My Mom's Story, a book that everybody is reading and that I am so very proud of.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And the cover... she actually got a graphic artist to do this one. It cost me a little extra, but I wanted it to say what I wanted it to say. So what characters in your books that have you created that have been the most difficult? When you have, main characters and you have minor characters, which characters do you find are the most difficult? And then we're going to get to the good part next. And you can guess
who
it
were you asking?
Anybody that wants to enter it. Larry, what would you say with this new book? First of all, if it's on ISIS and stuff like that, that would be great because I'm going to form a panel show in May or June for people that write exactly what you're writing. And there are New York Times bestselling authors that are going to be on the show, and I want their opinion about ISIS and about Hezbollah and how you write it so that people understand just how scary this really is. So this is a topic that this is a topic
is
that
why,
I would that I yeah.
This is why I wanted to do it myself. Like I say, I appreciate publishers, but there's so much I want to say. There's so much going on right now, and I want to say it like it is. Sort of. And another thing, my sister lives right now in Lebanon, and which has a large Christian population. So she's seeing both worlds, and she's seeing how Christian. Here's Hezbollah, which is a Shiite terrorist group supported by Iran, which wants to take over the Middle East. And so being an American, blonde-haired, blue-eyed American on top of that, living in a multicultural country like Lebanon, she's just seeing so much of all the details, and it makes it even more intriguing than just terror, because there's so much history, there's so much politics involved, so much cultural diversification. So there's a large Christian town near her, and Hezbollah has taken over the town where she lives part-time also.
Oh, God.
She has gotten to where she has befriended much of Hezbollah, but here she is an American, and she has a brother, me, but that's an ex-Marine. And Marines were, the first time I ever heard of Hezbollah is when Hezbollah blew up the Marine detachment as part of a UN peacekeeping force in Beirut. That's the first time I ever heard of Hezbollah. So what I'm saying, a lot of this is personal. As an American, as an ex-Marine, I'm a Vietnam, you know, era veteran, all this to where at the same time, she's seeing also their side. She doesn't agree with their side. That's not the point. She's seeing terrorists that are fanatic, but all and politically, very straight. I don't call them fanatic and religiously, but at the same time, they're protecting. The one thing keeping ISIS out of Lebanon right now is Hezbollah. So the whole Christian community there is, it's sort of like Stalin and Roosevelt. You had to find a way to get along because right now you had a worse enemy called Adolf Hitler. So she doesn't know how long, the Christians and Hezbollah. And there's a lot of Muslims in Lebanon, too, that also do not like Hezbollah. They consider them puppets of Iran, which they are. But at same time, they're keeping from being slaughtered, not just killed, slaughtered, because of Hezbollah. They've had to find mutual agreement, and she's seeing a human face to them. To me, that gives it more depth, but also it could make it more controversial. And so my sister does not want... I mean, she goes out of her way to keep her feet on the ground. Don't lose focus. Understand they're terrorists. Understand they're fanatics. Understand they're part of Iran that wants to take over the whole Middle East. But at the same time, here they are. They've befriended us. They've helped us. They're protecting us. They have a human side. So she doesn't want to be a jihad Jane at all, like go from one black and white to another black and white. So it's very complex, but incredibly intriguing. So I wanted to get that in, too. It's more than just ISIS. It's the whole gamut of Middle East recent history mixed with even ancient history. The Phoenicians used to be in Lebanon, you know, things like that. So. That's why I decided to self-publish, and I'd love you to read it and give me advice.
I am gonna read it, and you know what? I just read Mistaken Enemy by Dennis Nieman, and it's about a young Jewish boy that sort of like dared to go to Israel, and for some reason, because of his background that he doesn't know about, he doesn't know he's half Jewish and half Arab, they mistake him as an Israeli spy and a Palestinian spy.
Wow.
And what happened, and he gets thrown. He gets on a plane, and his passenger next to him is Palestinian, and he winds up going to live with the family for a while. and finally realizing that they are terrorists from information that he gained, and the book was totally scary. It was really unbelievable. So that sort of fits. So let's get back to how do you take your scenes in your romance novel? How do you create the romance and keep it in good taste, which explains why I did not approve of some of the requests for reviews or covers on my review site, because there's a way to, you know, have romance scenes, and you could have them over the top however you want. But like Marcia said before, I don't think they need to be on the cover so explicitly. So how do you create your romance scenes and keep them just a little below the boiling point?
I try to write like I read, and I give my reader mm-hmm. credit for having an imagination. And I like to keep mm-hmm. a little mystery to it and let the reader draw from it a little bit of what they want. It is a fantasy. You don't have to spell everything out. You don't have to lay it all out so, you know, explicitly, I don't think.
Yeah.
Just let it flow naturally and let the reader take from it a little bit of what they want and make it more enjoyable, I think.
I have to agree with you, because when I have scenes that are too explicit, I skip over them. Seriously.
Yeah.
And if they get too explicit,
I think a lot of people do that.
I skip over them, yeah. There's a way to write it. And then the other part is, and Marcia's good at this because she just fixed her book, mm-hmm. so I'm going to put her on the spot. Dialogue mm-hmm. has a lot to do with how you write a romance novel, too. And dialogue drives the plot. That's the other thing I'm really not good at. So when Larry said he's writing his book in first-person narrative, that's me. That's me. If I don't have to write anybody saying anything, I could just write it as a narrative, third-person, first-person.
I like that.
I got it covered.
I actually like narrative.
Even when I read other people. Yeah.
I think you connect with the reader. You connect with the character. I haven't written it. I've written it in my children's books, but I have not written it really in my other mm-hmm. novels. But I actually like that, because I think first person, like, so Fran, if that's what you do, I mean, I think people connect with it. I know the advice is not to do that all the time.
Yeah.
Editors say that, don't do this. But I think as a reader, I think a lot of readers connect faster when it's a first person, because they just, you know, they feel something right upon the first chapter, even. They get involved.
It's more personal. It's more personal that way, and you identify with the character, and mm-hmm. this is my opinion, of course. But to me, you identify more with what you're reading. It's more like talking to a friend rather than observing it on television.
So you just helped me do that.
Editors say they don't like it. And, you know, I have found over the years, as of late, after doing this for almost 20 years, that I think that you have to go for what you like and try and do it the best you can and write it a good story. And that's really because you can hear a lot of advice, and everybody has their own technique. And, you know, it's not comfortable writing if you try to write like other people and what they do.
Yeah.
So what comes natural to you, if it's first person, then do it, you know, but it may be hard for you to do this in a romance.
Well, I'm just thinking about writing it as something that happened to two people that might have worked out together or might not have worked out together, and add a little spice to it, because I promised my doctor I would.
Well, you know, maybe what you could do is write a first chapter of, you know, because the first time I did short stories was with Virginia Templeton. I don't, you know, I'm not big on short stories mm-hmm. for myself. However, my editor suggested that I do things like this, because that actually helps you write the first chapter of a book. That's what people say. I don't love a short story, but I think that sometimes technique might work. For you right now, if you're not sure, I think something like that, if you want to, like, even if you took it over to a young adult part, you know, you're good with young adults because you taught all those years, you know, and I think that you understand young adults very well, because I've heard you talk to other people, and I know a lot of, you know, I've talked to you myself, and I think a young adult for you, if you wanted to write a love relationship type or something like that, would come easier.
Yeah, I probably would, and if I gave it to my two nieces to read, they probably would love me forever.
And it would help you out, probably.
Some,
they might tell you if it's not the way that they see it. But I think romance, I don't care if it's 100 years ago or 200, it's still romance. You know, nothing has really changed. Boy meets girl, guy meets guy, whatever the relationship is, you know, these days, significant other, it's still love.
Yeah. Well, you're right, because we're going to have a show another week
on
a significant other.
The, short story.
Yeah. We're going to have a show next week on a significant other, seriously.
Yeah.
To me, that's the significance of romance anyway. I mean, it depends on what market. Once there is such a thing as erotic romance, and that's fine if that's what people want to read and you want to write.
Mm.
But I'm like y'all. I kind of have old-fashioned values, and I want to reflect them in my writing rather than just sensationalize. So I know that, love and hormones are all involved, and it can be beautiful, and I try to bring some of that out without being explicit. That's just my taste.
Yeah.
And if people want more, I can't or won't give them more. I'm more interested in the story and the relationship than steamy, but I also realize people are human, you know. So I might do a little teasing, but I kind of want to be natural and real. This is feelings, and you bring out feelings and even desire, things like that. I think that's great to touch on and lead up to a point, but I don't go further myself. I'm more interested in the story. I have things, beyond that, too, I want to say.
Well, I agree with you, but how do you add in the dialogue? Because some of these authors, and I really get annoyed at times. I know that there's a time that people use explicit language, and it fits some plots. I mean, I've read a lot of mystery thrillers where every other word is, bad words, and I'll say, I'm not reading this, I don't want to. And then they read it in a romance novel. So how do you keep the language and the dialogue to drive the plot, and are the conversations lengthy or short? How do you keep it so that people don't say, oh my God, not again, not that word again?
Well, it depends on your character. Probably your character.
Once again, it's to taste. Like, let's go on comedians, for instance, because some people say all that comedian has is a bad mouth, and it is it's a shock value, and some people get off to it. In the case of Richard Pryor, I loved him to death, and he did it, but he also did other things. Most of the time, I agree. Don't just shock me all the time. Be funny. Don't just hit me with words and ideas. So in writing, including on romance, I kind of feel the same way. There's more, if that's what suits you, what's great about a free press, man, you can go anywhere and find what you want.
Right.
But I do think it is easily a turnoff and also devaluing. And so there's more to, I know some authors that they absolutely believe in using every four-letter word and every scene alike. Once again, fine. And my point is, I'm not interested in that. And I know there has to be a market for it. I know there's a lot of people feel the way
there,
they
there
do
is a, there
I have,
is, you know what? Honestly, there is a huge
that.
Market. There is a
yes,
huge
I,
market.
I,
right.
I
but
have it, people tell me that. And they,
there is, but you
say,
don't have to write that way. You know, Fran knows what happened in my book, Virginia Templeton Stories. I had some scenes that I felt every time I was trying to explain to my friends to read my book, I'm like apologizing, I think it was wrong for me to apologize. I mean, because I took the words out that I wasn't comfortable in using. I actually wanted to see when I first wrote the story if I could even do a story that was very sexy like that, and I could. But I did know my character, Virginia Templeton, enough to know that I don't even think she would want me to talk about what I did, so I took some of those sentences out, and they weren't long scenes, so I could, I don't edit my own work, but my editor didn't do this. I took out, when I had it republished, I took out some of the things I was uncomfortable with because I felt it wasn't necessary, and after writing it, but I will say, because I do have so many erotic authors on, this is the way they like to write, this is how they're successful, and they are very successful. They really are. I mean, they are successful, but sometimes on my shows, I have to say, okay, explain this to the audience, because there are things that people write now you know, that it's very different. So I think that some people don't understand some of the writing now because it is very explicit, you know, with, you know, half human, or they become, you know, a human and then they're an animal.
The shapeshifters, yeah.
Shapeshifters, yeah. And I've had several shows like that. So at the first show, I said, all right, let's just explain this to everybody, you know, and they write very naturally this way. I don't, for me, it can't be. It's just not what I write. So I've decided after all these years and everything that I've done, I'm just writing the way I like it and the way my characters will go. They swear, my character does swear because that's her personality. And that was why I used her at the beginning when I wrote a screenplay. I had a hard time writing swearing. This is 15 years ago. I not that I don't swear in my regular life, because I do, but I had a hard time getting over the fact that what would people think if my book or somebody read my book and they're thinking, oh, I'm like this person or whatever. It took me a lot of years to get over that, and a lot of writers have that problem. It inhibits them. So it's probably better to stay in your own comfort zone, and if you have to go out of it, then try to do it where you're
happy,
and where you're happy,
right,
at the end,
yeah,
of the day. At the end of the day.
Do you find
that
you lose the point, though? Go ahead, Doris.
I mean, I think as a writer, it's always been, I think, my place. It's like I write it like no one else is going to read it, and I want to be comfortable, and I want to be able to write it and want to read it how I wrote it. And I think that's a key, especially if you're just starting out in writing.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
just be yourself.
Yeah.
Stay in your comfort zone.
Yeah.
And just,
I
think you're going to find an audience for what you write and for your, you know, and you don't have to be untrue to yourself.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
I agree with that 100%. And
the truth of the matter
is
that after, with all these swearing words and all these scenes, sometimes I find, because I've read over 5,000 books, people, seriously, that you lose the story. And you lose the point of the story. And when I do a book review, I'm looking to find the message or what the author is trying to say.
Yeah.
That's my fault. My mother's fault for making
me
read six
that's
books
me.
A week. Yeah.
Right.
And don't make swear words
and
sensationalism, you know, try to carry your story, because it's not going to. You've got to have
yeah,
story there.
At the
you
end of the day,
dialogue.
It does not. At the end of the day, it does not carry, and, you know, and the first time I had a group of erotic writers on my show when I was with Red River, I really had never had them on before, and I, you know, I think you remember, I had like six or seven people on, and, you know, it was different for me to hear all of this, and it was fine, though, because they like to write this way. But for me, I didn't. And so, but one person said something to me when the difference between, and I didn't forget it, the one thing they said is some people write when they have a love scene with the door open. Other ones close the door, and that's private in their bedroom, okay? But, and some keep the door open, and that's how they write that way, because they put it explicit sex. And there are readers that like that. And look at 50 Shades of Grey. I mean, it's just, I mean, for all the people that say they don't like it, there's all the people that read the book, okay, and the series, you know.
That was
and
the first series that I sent back and didn't read. They sent me the three copies, and they wound up somewhere else. I refused to read that. I was just like, that's not me. But, you know, sometimes they'll think that, Larry writes from personal experience, but I'm wondering how many of the romance writers write a book and people read it and say, well, I wonder if the author's like that, or if that reflects...
No, I don't even do that. I don't know if they do that, because I think that they get deep in the character. You know, if you have a good character, hopefully they don't think it's the author. You know, I mean, hopefully.
No, you don't know.
You know, well, right. I mean, you don't
it's
know.
It's not you, that's for sure.
Yeah, no. For sure, I know.
It's not sure, for sure, but if you could choose one scene from your book that you think really kept it going, or the one scene in your book in Hypocrites, or in Larry's book, which I couldn't put down, and Marsha's book, Grand Central Station, which scene do you think would be the one that just gets authors, readers, like, I read her book last week in 1 hour and a half. I just picked it up and read the whole thing. What do you think draws the reader to read it? Is it that first paragraph? Because if I read the first paragraph or the first page of a story of a book and it doesn't draw me in, you're in big trouble. And if I don't, it takes me more than an hour and a half,
know,
2 hours to read 400
you know,
pages,
I,
you're in big trouble.
You're a reviewer, I know, but it, you know what? The truth is,
yeah.
I feel that you should give the author, you know,
more chance.
A little time, because I think that, it, you know, the story has to have a beginning, middle, and end, and I think
yeah.
that's one of the problems that happens in writing is that you think that your story at the beginning has to have this huge beginning, and then sometimes in the middle, like in a movie, I'll say in a movie, the beginning is great, the middle sometimes is
dread.
Really not good. People take a nap sometimes in the show. I go to a lot of movies. And then at the end, and if at the end they start singing and dancing and they have this whole elaborate thing that, and then people go, oh, and they walk out, they go, oh, what a great movie. They forgot that whole middle was bad. Okay.
It was awful, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, you know, so I think the book should be, I think the whole book should be a good story, and I think that's one of the problems for authors is they're expecting, because people say, oh, it has to jump off the page. Being an agent for a lot of years, people would say, oh, it
always.
Has to jump off the page, but it doesn't always jump off the page. Some of your really great movies, it doesn't jump off the page. It takes you from the beginning to the middle and the end. You go, oh, this was such a good story. That's how I feel.
Every age has a certain formula, and so I'm not going to try to pick up for the formula or knock the formula.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, whether it's a movie or a book or whatever, can get so formulaic that it turns you off.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the formula... And once again, I'm going to self-publish the next because I don't want to be stuck with a formula. But at the same time, you have to keep it in mind. You have to pay attention. In this day and age, from what I keep hearing, I'm an older guy, so it doesn't necessarily apply to me. But I have kids, and they have friends, and I do believe this. People are so ingrained anymore to the remote control world. If it doesn't hit you smack dab in the face real quick, their attention span is gone.
Yeah, that's true.
So I have to at least be aware of that. So the point is, it's great if you're going to defy a formula. It might sound heroic and independent, but you might lose your audience, and you have an audience of one or two or ten. You at least have to keep this stuff in mind. And if you can swing it your way, that's the key. Can you swing it your way? I'm reading Out of Africa right now because it's a first-person fictionalized memoir, and because of my novel that I'm writing now, I want to see how this woman did it. And it was from 100 years ago, and it's a very, very, very different style. I love an older guy. I think that kids today cannot read Out of Africa. It's very, very descriptive and very first person. Very, she'll go 10 pages at a whack without dialogue.
Oh, and wow.
That doesn't fit the bill these days. And I'm not criticizing it or the formula. You have to be aware of this stuff is the point. And then somehow pull it off, whatever you're going to do, with the formula or without.
Is there a lot of scenery in that book? Do you read every? Does she describe
tons.
Everything?
Tons.
See,
and,
yeah, it depends.
Which I do
it depends
mine,
on the book. It depends on how
mine.
It's described.
Right. You can overdo it. You can overkill.
Yeah.
You can just drive people crazy with overdescription. But you got to have some. You got to let people feel the environment, feel the mindset. It's an art. Art.
That is hard. And before I forget, because I don't want to forget, next Wednesday we're going to have another panel show, except this time we're going to have a whole bunch of mystery thriller writers, and we're going to talk about which villain in your novel would you like to bring back, what would he do next, and what would you like him to do to your main character to teach your main character that he's not gone yet, or he or she's not gone yet. Should be interesting. On the 23rd, I have Dan Stone, and he has created Colm and Aiden, two guys, and they're really hot. One will freeze you with ice, and the other is going to heat you up with heat. Ice on Fire, Dan Stone. And I am honored on February 29th to be interviewing one of the number one New York Times bestselling authors in the world for violent crimes, Philip Margolin.
Has that'd
requested
be great.
An interview. I can't believe it. And it's at 12 o'clock. I have to do a special time for him. On the 3rd of March, I have New York Times bestselling author Vincent Zandri. And on the 10th, we've got Goodbye to the Dead by New York Times bestselling author Ryan Freeman. But if you want to know a good, great nonfiction book to read, Takedown is about Jeff Buck and how he actually took down Hell's Angels and a drug cartel. And it's a real story.
Wow.
And he just emailed me and told me I did a good job on the review, thank goodness. I don't want him to come get me. He's the chief of police of Reminderville, Ohio. We've got First Order by Jeff Abbott. We've got Mistaken Enemy by Dennis Meehan. And we've got Mercy by Daniel and Michael Palmer. And those are just some of the 4 books I read over the weekend. No, seriously. So we're going to change gears now. And, you know, I've done book reviews for a long time. And I've done other stuff in writing because I'm a reading and writing staff developer. And when it comes to reading, my mother made me read a million books a week or a day or whatever. So there are certain things that Marcia and I were talking about yesterday that authors need in order to be a success. And a book review is not the only thing that they need. So, Marcia, would you, you know, tell the listeners?
Over the years, you know, I'm sure everybody on the show today will get the fact that all of these, you know, reviews are good. You don't need 300 reviews. I think that people think you do, but I think most readers, they're not reading 300 reviews. Maybe authors are looking and going like, because I have a lot of authors on the go. They can't seem to catch up to what everybody else has, and I keep telling them you can't be like everybody else, but they get depressed. And over the years, people, I've still stayed in the business, but people, I had great clients, they leave. But what they need is, you know, nowadays, because you do have to change certain things, but if you are writing a screenplay or you're writing a description, you need a synopsis, which is what Fran writes, you know, and I think that Fran is going to be offering that because I've seen that her, and I've listened to all her shows for years, that most people say, Fran Lewis, she gets what the author means. And sometimes the author does not really know how to put it in good words, because that is the hardest part, is writing like a log line, which is 2 sentences to try to sell the book or the movie, and a synopsis, which a lot of times sounds very trite, and but you need it really badly, you know, and you need a good one. So I think that's one thing I'm happy that you're going to offer, because I think over the years, that's what most people that have been on your show said, Fran, you got what I say. And it has nothing to do with a book review, because you, as everybody on here knows, you have to fill out forms now. You know, every time you go on a site or you want to show, you know, want to go join something or, you know, even have somebody do some services for you, you have to write a description and you have to write a very short little synopsis. So I think those are the hardest things. And I think if you offer that, I think that's really a good thing to do for people. It has nothing to do with the review.
Yeah, that's very true, because I'm trying to explain to Amazon that I don't get paid to do reviews. I had a problem with them a while back, and I had some New York Times bestselling authors actually call Amazon and say, We don't pay her to do this, which is the reason why we come on her radio show to do. They don't pay me to that either, people.
But it was wrong. It was wrong then, because it's not true.
Yeah.
It's not true. The same way that people would say that an agent, I never got paid for anything I did. I'm in the Writers Guild. You cannot get paid. And I still, to this day, there is one person will not take it off their site, and it is not true. And I've never charged anybody. And so, you know, and that's where bad rumors start. And because of the internet, things go out faster. And it may not be true at all of a lot of things that people say. So this is the way it is now. You know, bad news travels and it stays there sometimes. And it's not true. And in your case, Fran, no, you do not get paid for your reviews. And that was a shame. But I do know a lot of other people now, they're taking their reviews off. I have no idea. I heard yesterday that they're taking people off now for typos. They're actually looking into the books, and which is a good thing, because the only person that suffers is the reader. The reader doesn't realize, they don't care who publishes a book, but it better be done right if you publish it yourself.
Yeah, they said if there's a lot of mistakes in the book, they are taking the books off. I had a reviewer, and that would be interesting to ask this question. I had a reviewer that reviewed a book for an author, and she had a problem with her email, so I had to send the author the review. And she asked me if she wanted me to tell the author of the book that he had a couple of mistakes in the book. And I go, that's not what you're here for. I don't tell authors how many typos they have unless they have a whole book full of them. I'm not going to tell you that. That's your job to figure it out. And like Stuart Woods at the end of his books, which I read two of them recently, and he had some character flaws and character mistakes in there, said, I don't want to know if I made mistakes. Tell it to my editor. It's their fault that they do.
Yes.
So would you, I mean, if you're writing and you're having your book edited, what else do you think besides a synopsis do you need? I mean, everybody should have a press release of some type. And Larry, how do you get people to know that your book is there? What do you think is the best way to get, besides a synopsis, which I think should go after your title page in your book, if you need one?
Well, once again, I am part of a writer's club here at a in a community with a major university. So I access them, and I've been on the local PBS at NPR. And,
and
I have a friend that's a lawyer. He wasn't an agent, but he advised authors, and we've worked together. And then I also use, like, Twitter and Facebook, too, and they are limited help. But I must say, the novel of mine that you read, I Will Be the One, a month ago, I tried a Facebook ad with the Philippines only. Boy, did I get good response. I mean, hundreds.
Oh, nice.
Just from
You say you paid for the ad, right?
Yeah, but
yeah, you have to. You have to. No, I agree with you. That is. I'm paying for ads now a lot of times because I think because I don't know if you how long have you been doing this? Because for the last 6 years, 6 years ago or 7 years ago, Fran will know this. Everybody shared, and your shares would get out there. Doris, I think you might. Have you been writing a while? So do you notice that the shares, people don't share
sure,
anymore?
Sure.
And they want you to pay money. And you need to.
My following has greatly increased. I do the share. The share is helpful. But if you boost it,
exactly.
It goes way, way, way beyond it.
Yeah.
And what I did is on when I was boosting a month ago, the climax of my book was the People's Power Revolution in the Philippines. There's a love story also. That's how I write. I like a romance and love stories as much as anybody, and it sure helps increase the value and marketability of the book. But I also like the story and values and message and all that stuff. Anyway, it climaxed from the People's Power Revolution that overthrew Marcos. And what I did was I was comparing this peaceful revolution with what's going on in the Middle East now, the jihad. And boy, they ate it up. I mean, I didn't spend very much money at all, and I got a huge response.
Yeah.
And my friend that's a lawyer, that's where we met. We were in the Peace Corps together in the Philippines. And he has a lot of contacts there, and I'm planning on going there this summer to be there with some of his contacts.
See, that's the main thing. It's very hard to get, like, an advisor. I had wanted to write something about arson in one of my books, and I asked the fire department here, and they said they would help me, but I guess I wasn't James Patterson. What can I say? So it's hard sometimes to get, like, somebody. I do have somebody in that works for the FBI, so that if I asked him to read it, he would read it. But I needed somebody with the experience in arson to write it, so I guess I changed the story and made it something else. Okay. Before we stop, everybody tell everyone what's next, and Marcia, tell everybody about Central, Grand Central Station, when it came out and why they
it came
read
out
it, because
and
I
it,
said
it,
so.
It, you know, it's a short, it's a novella because it's off of my screenplay, Grand Central Station. It's changed somewhat, but that, you know, it was optioned for a movie, but in those years when it was optioned, it was not taken. Because everybody that does know, it costs money to make movies, and that's the difficult part. And whether a lot of books should definitely be movies, and they all can't, but, you know, it's a shame because it's cost so much to make them that that's one of the problems in that industry. But so anyway, so that's where it's from. And then I have my shows, the World of Ink shows, and you and I are probably going to do some shows maybe and talk about some different things like we talked about today, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Michigan Avenue Media is offering, you know, that's a company that Fran is now going to be doing synopsis is for and log lines. And I hope people will try to use you for that service, because I really do think that's a necessary thing for certainly if the screenwriters are listening and authors. I think it's really important to have, you know, a short synopsis, longer synopsis. You have to have a lot of different things these days, because you really, even for press releases, they want, you know, even the bigger companies, it doesn't matter. They ask the author to do a lot of things. Are you, send us your bio, do this, do that. So along with bio and everything else, I think that's what people need. And I'm going to continue to write, and that's it. That's my story. There we go.
Well, where can we find out about you, Larry? And when is the book coming out? Because I can't wait to read it. This is my thing. It's just different, it's more real.
I want to get it as presentable as possible, and I'm very glad you're interested in it, because, like I say, I had you in mind because you like my last novel so much that I thought, yeah, I kind of like to try this one. For instance, I'm going to self-publish this one. I kind of wanted advice from somebody I trusted. So I'll probably finish with the self-editing today. And my daughter-in-law, her mother also writes novels, and my daughter-in-law helps her mother, so I'm going to have her look at it. And then I might send it to you, but it has to be digitized. Do you read digital?
No, I can't read on my computer whatsoever. My eyes bug out. I was working with a specific group of authors, I can't read it. I can't read anything on my computer. My eyes bug out.
I could print it out for you. I don't mind printing it out for you, but, I mean, it's a pre-published stage, so that's the point. I'm still finishing
it. I'll read it before it comes out and give you my opinion. That's another service that's on that thing. I'm doing, like, editorial reviews.
You need me to print it out for you?
As long as you put... As long as you put it in a folder.
Okay, sure.
Right, because I didn't put mine in a folder. I didn't put it in a folder, right? I know.
He's staring at me right here. Now, my cousin wants to read it, so I said to her, I have to put it together for you so that you could read it.
Well, why can't you tell her to buy it? That's my problem.
She
give everybody
to my library. She comes to the Fran Library. I mean,
you know what? If she wants me to, I'll send her an e-book if you give me her address, you know, her email.
I'll give you her email address, because she'll read it on her computer. She'll read it on her phone, but she knows I won't.
Okay.
She knows her cousin won't, because I don't do anything. The reason is that, first of all, I can't. My eyes bother me. And second of all, I like to scribble on the book and circle and underline and write my thoughts, so that by the time I'm finished reading the book, the review's written in my head. And while I was in surgery two weeks ago, I seriously probably wrote a few reviews while the half hour that it was taking to do this thing. So that kept my mind off of whatever they were doing, which I really don't care. Doris, where can we find out more about you and what's next?
I am working on the sequel to Hypocrites. I am working on that, and I'm also working on another romance with another weird death. So a poisoning death.
Oh, cool.
But
my main thing now is I am struggling with like the rest of you, with the marketing, with, you know, reviews and finding a better mousetrap to selling books. I mean, you know, basically, that's been my challenge lately.
Yeah. The yellow pages of book reviewers I'm in there. And if you find the link, if you put it in the search box in Google, the yellow pages of book reviewers, there are hundreds of people that are in there that review books. They're reputable. I don't know. Some of them charge, some of them don't. They're not supposed
to. That's what people are doing now. They charge. You know, and that's okay, because that's the way it is. You know, Doris, I understand what you're saying, too, because, but for me, I find all the social marketing, that, you know, I don't really get stressed a lot. I get stressed from social marketing, and I'm doing it all the time, so I'm starting to pay people to do things. I can't. It's too much, because mentally, it, you know, no matter how much you do this, it doesn't really get you sales.
That's what I've learned. It's not really.
That is
it
really
takes
true.
A lot of your time, and it's not really effective.
Yeah, the best time is writing your book.
Something that's going to be effective. Right.
Hardly anything is these days because there's too many writers out there. And that's you have to – I'm paying for things now because I feel that you need to pay for a certain service, but you got to make sure that they do it right because most of the people out there – Fran knows how I feel about this, and I've listened to shows, mm-hmm. and I hear people talking, and they really aren't telling people the truth. So, you know, it does bother me. So that's – you know, the truth is social media is so stressful. And it doesn't. It's not that effective a lot of times. That's the problem.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
I'm with you. So I just want to get back to writing. That's what I want to do.
Exactly.
That's what I love. That's what my passion
exactly.
is. Right. I want to write. I don't want to be bothered with all this other stuff.
Because I think it's very stressful. I think it's stressful, and it, you know, and in a lot of ways, it's. Like, I really feel like I'm wasting time. And I actually was looking over one of my books yesterday. I must have written it of my character that says she doesn't like to waste time. So I'm thinking, oh, that's where it must have come from because I feel that this is a waste of time a lot of times. And I've really gotten, after all these years of doing this, I want to have fun writing. And I don't think mm-hmm. that this is fun, all of this PR. I don't think it's fun. It's not.
No,
fun.
It's really not.
You have to do it though. I mean, it doesn't market itself unless it's finally caught on. I go to book. Like I said, I've been on radio and TV.
Yeah.
I go to book fairs. This friend of mine that I told you I was in the Peace Corps with, we're having a Peace Corps. I don't know what it is. He just now told me about it. I'm going to that in September. And my book is based on my experiences in the Peace Corps. I mean, you have to include things like this just to get the word out, hoping that it catches on enough that it takes off on its own somewhere eventually. But it's not going to take off on its own without you doing something.
No, you
something.
Have to market that right. for sure. But I will say that I've had a lot of authors on that have been in the service, and this is true. They are very good promoters, and they have a lot of fans behind them, and they have a lot of help from other people that have been in the service. And,
You've established yourself,
But you know, establishing yourself. I mean, you're only as good, let's say, as one of the books, you know, and then the other one drops, you know, and Amazon, you know, Amazon. I feel like Amazon is like the Hunger Games, it, like pits everybody against you. Look at your rating, and you go, how did they get to be number 10? Okay, or you know, I don't know that there's an answer to that at all. So I always like to look for answers, but there aren't any. That's what I tell people. No, there really aren't answers. That's the thing.
There isn't. There are a whole lot of sites that I'm on that I know are good, but you can't. I don't even have the patience anymore to put all my reviews on every site.
Yeah.
One of them that I post on that's really good, and she's out there because she's on Facebook, is Angie's Diary. And I have to have the energy to post everything because there's so many questions they ask you. Scoop It, if you join it, is really good because they give you tips on how to market also. Stumble Upon is good, Blurty. I belong to everything. I just don't, you know, it depends on the book and how good it is.
I think what we could do,
I post
you know,
it on
what,
every site. I don't.
Think you should put, like, the blogs. I think, on Michigan Avenue Media, I think the blog, I think we should put all your review, you know, when you do a review like we used to, we'll just put it out there and try to push it out there through the shows and things like that because lately, it doesn't really matter what people do because everybody has a blog now. Everybody has a website. Everybody has a Twitter account. Everybody has a Facebook account. Everybody's in LinkedIn. So how do you stand out? It's almost an impossibility and not really a fair thing when you're watching some people. You go, like, how do they do this? I don't know the answer. And everybody says algorithms, and I don't even know what. Nobody even knows what that really means. You know, they go, oh, it's algorithms. Oh, great. You know, what does that mean? Nothing. It doesn't mean anything to us because we're not in charge of that. So
if you go on LinkedIn, my LinkedIn gets a lot of, I've had in the last, I don't know why, month, I've got like 50 people that connected with me, and of course they asked to be on my radio show.
The thing is, everybody connects with everybody, and they like everybody, and they do this, and they do. But do they buy the books?
No,
they're asking me to read the book. They're trying to push our own books. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for readers, right? And I would like to have on my show. I've offered this over. I've done I don't know how many 650 shows, saying please, readers, come on and talk. I want to hear what the readers really think. you know, but everybody, mostly the readers don't want to come out, they're busy reading, you know, and that's who you have, that's what you're writing for, is readers to like your book. It's not really for people, it becomes like an insane world out there. You're sitting there hour after hour and you go like, really? I mean, can I be doing this? And you get mad at yourself, I'm sure, because you're sitting there, you know, you're posting and you're going like, oh, really? And then, but the thing that I think is right, you're right about the thing about Facebook. I really think, you know, I hired somebody now on Facebook, from web.com to try to do boosting for me, because there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And you do get people. I mean, and you need to get new people, not the people on the Facebook pages, because they're not going to, if they were going to buy your book, they did it already. Otherwise,
right.
They're not. So you need new people. And press releases, I think, are a good thing. I used to do them every show for, like, when we did Red River. I haven't, but I'm going to start doing them again. I did one every show I did, and I think that's a press release is really good. It doesn't have to say a ton. You don't have to have a long press release, but short
mm-hmm.
ones. And I think that works. Those are the things that work. But you got to write. I mean, that's the thing. Over the last 20 years, what I tell people is write and enjoy it, because if you don't, then this, it's not what it was meant to be for you.
Well, I want to thank everybody.
Yes, and thank you, Fran.
This has been fun. And Marcia and I are going to be doing a whole lot more together. Larry,
yeah.
I can't wait to read this. I'm going to have a panel show either in May or June, and I will let you know when, because the main thrust of the show is, how do you write a book about terrorism? How do you get the facts straight? And where do you do your research from, and any other questions that I could come up with off the top of my head? I think it's important, because on November 30th, I did a show with Michael Tabman, who's FBI, and we talked about the Paris attacks on the show. And he gave me the straight scoop. So I might ask Michael to join us, because he's an authority, and one or two other people whose books I've reviewed that are in counterterrorism. Before I forget, let's not forget the Canadian author that deals with counterterrorism, Simon Chavez, will be on with Thin Black Line on March 24th. And there's a whole lot more. So thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
Doris, and I
thank
can't
you,
wait to
Fran.
Read the sequel, because those two characters are really great. And Larry, I definitely, let me know when the book is coming out. I will definitely read it, however form you send it, as long as it's in print and I could write on it and see it. And people that want me to read your book, large print wins every time. it does help. And for those of you that don't know, Faces Behind the Stones, Hidden Truths and Lies, I hope my editor will get it done. And I'm going to attempt, now that I've learned a whole bunch of lessons, attempt to write that romance novel for my doctor, who I promised I wouldn't say his name. Okay.
And Fran, you
so
forgot about your
great...
magazines. You forgot about your magazines.
Oh, yes. MJ Magazine. Seriously, Larry and Doris, are looking for articles on anything that you would, writing tips.
Sure.
Speak out. Political
sure.
issues. If you watch the primary, the yay. If you have an issue, Alzheimer's, writing tips, anything that you want to write about, MJ Aid is coming out at the end of this month, beginning of next. MJ stands for Marcia Joyce. She was my sister. And it's her fault that I'm doing this, because before she died, she said, you're getting to be an elephant like a pouch of potato. Yeah, I was 190 pounds. I'm 107 now. And I blame her, but that's okay. Between her and my mother, who made me, you know, read every single day, everything.
Well,
which
there's
is
a
why
story
I,
in that, Fran.
Yeah,
story
I know.
In that.
I know. Print is important to me, and reading makes me feel better. And with all I went through with her, I think what kept me going is the fact that all these wonderful authors gave me the honor of reading all of their books. So, if you want to write for MJ Aid and you have a specific article, let me know. Or just send me the article, and I don't care how many words you put. You know, 1,500, you know, is about right for an article. It's long, but who cares?
Mm-hmm.
And you can put your links on. You can put your information about your books in the magazine. And I just do it. I don't get paid to do that either, because that would kill doing it and having fun. So everybody have a great day. Have a wonderful day, and
thank you
I will
so
be
much.
In touch. And Doris, when the
you
book
too.
Comes out, make sure I get it first.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Have a nice day and bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
All right,
bye.
Bye. Thanks.